Morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And baseball season is underway. And there's nothing quite like going to a game at Wrigley Field. There really isn't. I mean, even when the Cubs suck, and they don't suck this year. They absolutely do not suck this year. It is a special, special experience. Anybody who's ever been to Wrigley knows that. Yesterday was the home opener. And we thought on that stupendous occasion of games at Wrigley Field for the 2016 baseball season, we would bring in a couple of guys who put together a book called Cubs 100, A Century at Wrigley. It is a terrific book if you are a fan of the Cubs, if you love Wrigley Field, if you just love really great stories and memories and wonderful baseball stories, you definitely have to get this book. The authors are Dan Campana and Rob Carroll. And the book is called Cubs 100, A Century at Wrigley. Let me welcome first Dan to the show. Hi, Dan.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good, sir. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Thanks good. For having us.
Absolutely. And here is Rob. Hey, Rob.
Hey, how you doing, Nick?
Good, good, good. I'm excited to have you guys on. I really love the book, man. It's one of those books that you can't put down. And I went back and read some of the stories over again. Just because I loved them so much, many of the stories over again, and this is a follow up book, correct?
It is. This is our second book. A couple of years ago, we put out Wrigley Field 100 Stories for 100 Years, which was a little bit more general, chronicled the first 100 years of the ballpark. So beyond the Cubs, which is the main attraction at the ballpark, it also had stories about the hockey that's been there, the football that's been there, the concerts that's been there, and just a little bit about how the ballpark has sort of become a life of its own in that neighborhood. And similar concept with 100 stories, so a lot of different storytellers with different perspectives on Wrigley Field from the sports side, but also from what it's like to live in the neighborhood and the businesses and things like that.
That was also a really great book. I enjoyed the hell out of that one, too. I have to tell you guys, I want to get your personal stories, which you actually include in the book. Like, you each have your memories about Wrigley and Cubs and things like that. I want to get to that. But I have to tell you personally, I grew up on Addison, six blocks away from Wrigley.
Awesome.
Yeah. And would walk to the games. And I'm one of these guys. I'm 50. So I'm one of these guys who can remember walking up to the gate and just getting in and sitting anywhere. You know, I was also one of those kids who put the seats up afterwards and would get the tickets to another game. So I've been, you know, my entire life has been connected to the Cubs in Wrigley Field, having grown up right on Addison. So I've got a lot of special memories. So reading this book, especially, you know, the stories that are about people who come from a very far, far distance to go to Wrigley, it's such an interesting perspective having, you know, grown up in the backyard of Wrigley, you know?
To tell you the truth, I'm actually someone who didn't grow up around Chicago. Actually, I grew up in central Illinois.
Who is this one talking?
This is Rob.
Okay, Rob, you grew up in central Illinois, okay?
Yeah. I originally grew up in central Illinois, a little town called Lakin, just north of Peoria. And so for me, going to the ballpark was an all-day thing. It was more like a vacation thing. You know, I know so many people associate the ballpark being right there in the neighborhood and just being able to walk down the street. But for me, it was something that that took some planning and some driving. And it wasn't just around the corner like it was for a lot of people.
Yeah. Which is and I love that perspective. It's such an interesting perspective, you know, being so far away. Now, what about you, Dan? Where did you grow up, and how did you have your Wrigley experience?
Well, I'm a city guy. For the first half of my my school years, up through grade school, living on the northwest side, Laramie and Diversey area, and then bounced out to the suburbs from high school, and ever since. So I had a little bit of both where, you know, we could just take a bus or two before a car was in the family. So we would take a bus or two to get down there. And that's how both my parents grew up in the city on the north side. And through their different means, that's how they, you know, high school, my dad went to Gordon Tech. My mom went to, I'm going to blank on the name. It used to be over by Belmont and Pulaski.
Mother Guerin?
No, the other one, and I can't think of what it is. Across the street from a McDonald's, but they both, you know, grew up in the city, and through their own means, through their own reasons, they ended up at the ballpark quite often. And they actually met in the bleachers in the 70s. And so I in the first book, my story was, if it weren't for Wrigley, there wouldn't be me.
Right.
And, so that's, you know, and what the great thing, as you mentioned, is that there's sort of that microcosm that there's all these stories that exist, but they all kind of center around the same type of themes, whether it's family or great games or things like that. And, you know, there's no shortage of relationships that started at Wrigley. I'm sure there's a few that ended too, but there's no shortage of them that started there. And just keep, you know, rolling over this this inherited love of the Cubs. And Rob and I joke about it when we do events. We talk about it. It's a sickness. It's not something that you can choose to be in a lot of respects. No, just, you're born with it and you stay with it.
No, it's absolutely true. I know that from personal experience. It's absolutely true. First of all, I want to make sure that everybody knows that you guys have a Facebook page. Facebook.com/100WrigleyStories. And they can follow you guys on Twitter at Cubs Century. So I want to make sure everybody, and we have a link to your book and everything on our Facebook page so people can get in information and order the book, and I really think they should. It's Facebook.com/NickDShow, Facebook.com/NickDShow for all the information. Okay, Rob, how did you guys start? I mean, obviously you put this other book together, and did you have people in mind? Because you got 100 stories in here from 100 different people, including, you know, like regular schmoes and Hall of Famer baseball players. Did you guys have a list in mind when you were choosing folks to get stories from?
Yeah, we definitely wanted to shoot for people that we didn't get in the first book, for one. It's some of the notable names that we weren't able to get to the first time around. So this time we wanted to get people like Sandberg and Dawson and Fergie Jenkins. But also we had a big master list of not only player names, what types of people we wanted to talk to. We wanted to find, like we said earlier, some of those faraway fans. We wanted to find certain people in the neighborhood. We wanted to find, Cubs fans who are just now picking up on the team, people who are down there in the middle of the playoffs, all the excitement. Also, those long-suffering Cubs fans. So we kind of had types of people that we wanted to seek out as well.
Yeah. And they all, it is so great because there's so many different people. Now, did you have to turn some, did you have to cut some? I just stumbled onto something, I can tell. What?
Well, Rob and I, our background, we're newspaper reporters for a long time. And so we're used to working in real short spans of time, day to day, you know, daily deadlines. So you give two newspaper guys, you know, 6, 8, 10 months to work on something, you know, we're going to kind of gravitate toward, well, we got time. So, and as Rob likes to point out, one of the most optimistic Cub fan things we did when we had our contract put together for this book with our publisher, the History Press, Arcadia Publishing, was to put a provision in there that if the Cubs were in contention during the 2015 season at certain points, the deadline would get extended. And so, you know, here we are. You know, they had just beaten the Pirates, and we've already had two deadline extensions.
They
the Pirates in the one-game playoff, and we told them and said, well, we might as well just go till the beginning of November now because they're going to just keep going. And, of course, you know, we all know what happened with the Mets series, and we were down there outside the ballpark for Game 4 talking to people, getting some great stories, and we actually had tickets for Game 5, so we thought we'd be down there for Game 4, get some work out of the way, come back and enjoy Game 5. Didn't work out that way, but they get knocked out, they get swept, and we kind of looked at each other and go, I guess we got to finish this thing now, don't we? So we were working right to the end, but it wasn't a matter of having too many stories and paring them down. It's because I think we really did a good job this time around of finding what we wanted in terms of the types of stories, the types of people, to really get the nice diversity that we have. So, you know, we could have had more, but then we would have been fighting over, you know, which ones we want to have in there. But we did a good job, I think, prepping to get us to the right ones the first time around, so to speak.
Well, you know, what's really funny is when you read these stories, one of the things that is almost every story has in common is when you ask people to tell stories about Wrigley Field, everyone includes the first time that they go there and what it feels like. Not just the first time that you actually go up that flight, go up the ramp and see the park, but every time you go to Wrigley. And that was a common thing you guys found in every story. And I feel the same way. Every single time I go to Wrigley, and I don't even know how many times I've been to Wrigley, every time I walk up the ramp and I see that field for the first time, I get the chills. Every time. And that is something that is a common thing in all the stories. Is that right?
I think something that we really found is, and just much like you just said, I know it's something that I think as well, is just how vibrant the colors are when you first walk up there. And maybe not so much in, like, say, April when the ivy's not as green, but even just seeing all the fans there and how just vibrant everything is. You've seen how many games on TV through the years, but to finally see it in person and just to be in the middle of that neighborhood, it's a sight. It's hard to describe.
It is. It really is something. I have to say, we have to break here, but I had the unbelievable privilege of singing the seventh inning stretch at Wrigley, along with Patty Vasquez and Pete McMurray, who used to work here at the station. And we did it towards the end of the 2014 season. And it was, you know, clearly not a good not a good season. And here's the thing about it. This is the story that I always have. And if you need another, ridiculous story, the mic didn't work. The mic did not work when we were up there, so nobody could hear us singing. We were on TV and everybody, and I got a bunch of texts from people, and you know, they're like, "What the hell happened to the sound?" I don't know. But all the years, you know, that I've been a Cub fan, this is just like a diehard Cub fan gets up there, dream come true. The mic doesn't work. It was still. I will say, I'm sorry.
As you say, that's really what being a Cubs fan's all about, right?
Yeah.
Right there. I mean, you get to the end and you don't win.
That's exactly right. But you know what's really funny? People are like, "Oh my God, you must have been devastated." No, I sang the seventh inning. You couldn't hear me, but I sang the seventh inning stretch at Wrigley. I mean, that's a lifetime. That is a memory that I'll have for the rest of my life. And I got like a jersey and a hat that only I have a Cubs hat that only seventh inning stretch singers have because it says seventh inning stretch singer on the side. So, you know, but still, the damn mic didn't work. So, all right, guys, hang on, okay?
Sure.
Okay, Rob and Dan are here. They are the co-authors of a terrific book called Cubs 100, A Century at Wrigley. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to hear some of the best stories. We hear about some of the best stories that are in this book and some from some incredible people. And you should really take a look at this book. You can follow these guys on Twitter, at Cubs Century, and their Facebook page, which has all their book signings and upcoming events, is facebook.com/100Wrigley Stories. We'll take a quick break, and we'll come back and talk more right after this on WGN. Baseball season has officially kicked off, and the home season at Wrigley Field kicked off yesterday. And we have a couple of authors with us who have written a book called Cubs 100, A Century at Wrigley. It's a collection of 100 fantastic stories about the Cubs and about Wrigley Field. Dan Campana and Rob Carroll are the authors, and you can check them out on our Facebook page. The link to getting the book is facebook.com/NickDShow. Follow these guys on Twitter, at Cubs Century. Let's see, guys. I want to get maybe your favorite. Each one of you has a favorite story, maybe, or two from the book. I can tell you a few of mine, but I want to hear from you guys first, and I'll throw a couple at you. Dan, why don't we start with you? Dan, is there one that stands out for you?
You know, it's funny because when we get asked that question, I think sometimes it turns into which is your favorite kid because we spent so much time with a lot of these stories. But one of the things that really was, you know, in a general sense, was exciting and fun for me is to get to talk to some of these guys that I grew up watching, Sandberg and Dawson, you know, specifically two guys that were really kind of my core years, and to hear them kind of talk genuinely about what it meant to be there as a player, and they were each there under different circumstances. Sandberg was, you know, kind of a, you know, he was at the early set of his career, and he came in, and we all know the Sandberg game, you know, against the Cardinals in 84 that really put him on the map.
That would be June 23rd.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And then, you know, we're talking to Hawk, talking to Andre Dawson, and how he talked about Wrigley rejuvenating his career. And, you know, granted, they didn't get him to where he hoped to be, you know, getting a World Series out of it, but he, you know, became, you know, an icon, you know, so much of, you know, the association between the ballpark and the team is about how players connect with the fans, and Wrigley is the best place for that.
Yeah.
And when you perform well, they respect you for that, which brings me to what I think is probably one of my favorites. And it's Mark DeRosa, who spent only 2 years with the Cubs, 07 and 08.
Yep.
But he talks just about how it was just the most amazing experience for him to come here, and the fans respected that he, you know, he wasn't a marquee name, he wasn't a superstar, but he was a guy that hustled, he played the game the right way, he respected the fans, and they respected the way he played the game, and how he just fell in love with being here, adjusting to playing day baseball as much as they had to, coming from Atlanta where winning was the expectation, and hoping that he could come here and add to that mix and really bring that. And for him to say those were the two best years of his career just really kind of floored me, because I don't know that he said that anywhere else. So.
Yeah.
I think that's a highlight for me.
I agree with you, man. The DeRosa thing is great. And those, I have to say that in my lifetime, besides what's happening right now at Wrigley in terms of who they're fielding now, 2008 in my lifetime, I think, was the best team that they ever fielded. Like they were so deep, and they were such an incredible amount of talent on that team. It goes 84 and then 2008. And what's happening right now, obviously.
Sure.
But DeRosa was a key part of that. And to see that he does have, you know, so much respect and a lot of memory, and he holds that so dearly, you're right, man. I mean, it means a lot. It totally means a lot. What about you, Rob? Do you have a couple of favorites?
Yeah. You know, when putting this book together, just the journey to get some of these people are interesting stories in themselves sometimes, because there's such a diversity we have in the book. You know, in a given day, you can be talking to a couple fans, maybe a former player. But the day that I got in contact with Steve McMichael was probably one of the more interesting interviews I did. I had sent off an email to try to get in touch with him. And at about 8 o'clock at night, I get a phone call that says, "Rob, this is Steve McMichael. I hear you want to talk to me." And Steve and I talked about the time he actually got kicked out of the game singing the seventh inning stretch against the Rockies. And not only was that an interesting story, but that was also a game I had attended. So it was really nice to get the other side of that, something that I was actually in attendance for, and to also talk a little bit about what happened after that. I mean, stories like that, we see what happens on TV. We know we're able to see the replays. But you never really know what happens after that. Usually they just go back to the game.
Right.
So it was nice to kind of get that inside story a little bit from him.
Yeah, that's great. I got to say, I also, you know, as you said, you have a lot of varying stories here. I'm so glad that Joe Mantegna included sort of the birth of the Bleacher Bums, the story of that. That's a really fun one to have in the book, you know?
Yeah, that's a really fantastic story, too, because he makes a really good point talking about the bleachers and talking about actually just being in the stadium. And you think about all these different people who come from all these walks of life, and there might be a banker, there might be someone who just has a part-time job, there might be a business owner. They all come to the same place because they love the same thing. And for that, you know, 2.5-3 hours, they're all sharing that same experience, no matter what walk of life they come from. But at the end of the day, they all go back to their separate lives.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what Bleacher Bums is about, in a way. But really, I mean, that's what being a Cubs fan is about, and going there to Wrigley Field.
Yeah, yeah. It's true. One of my favorite stories is the story where they come in from, I want to say it's Omaha?
Is it the one from Oklahoma?
From Oklahoma? Is it the ones that where Harry says their name on TV?
Ivan Lundgren, yeah. From Omaha, you're correct on that one.
Yeah, and they end up going to tell the story a little bit about that.
Well, you know, like a lot of people, especially, you know, the VCR generation, where, you know, we kind of come up with the idea of, hey, we're going to go to the game and let's record, you know, the game so we can see if we were on TV.
Yeah, right.
Ivan, you know, remembering his story the best I can is his family, you know, being down in Nebraska and coming to visit his grandparents, you know, in the Chicago area and going to games, and unbeknownst to them that his parents back home had actually recorded the game over the Superstation WGN, and, you know, that they had sent them the note along. I think it was that they were in the ballpark that day. So obviously they're at the game. They have no idea, you know, that anybody, Harry or anybody, might be talking about them. But
right.
You know, to get home after the trip and, you know, and to be surprised that they've got a VHS to, hey, we recorded the game you were at, and there's a surprise on there, and of course to watch the game, and Harry mispronounces
right.
his last name, not Lovegren, but Love Green or something to that effect,
right.
which is actually an homage from Harry, because if he didn't mispronounce your name, he didn't like you, I think.
That's the thing. One of the reasons why I love that story so much, and it's so great, is because years ago, a buddy of mine got married. This was in 1993, and we started his bachelor. I was the best man at the wedding. This is back in 93. And we started the bachelor party weekend on a Friday. Remember the 220 starts?
Oh, yeah.
The businessman starts, the 220
yeah.
starts at Wrigley. We used to go to those all the time. We went to all the Friday 220 starts. So we go to the game, And I, at the, you know, I was connected with WGN at the time in 93, and I knew Roy Leonard. And I was still at the station, you know, working here at the station. So I got word back to the booth that I needed my friend's, you know, bachelor party announced on the air by Harry. So okay. like that family from Omaha, we did, you know, videotape it, and we had the timer going. We're at the game. And, you know, we don't have no other. So we go back to watch, like, the next couple of days later after the bachelor party ends, you know, and the hangovers have subsided. We went back to his house, and we popped the tape in, and we kind of, like, scanned through the game. And we get to this part of the game, and we're waiting for it because my friend's last name is Korostecki.
Okay? Oh, boy.
And it's C-H-O-R-O, very long Polish name. And we are just, like, so waiting for Harry to screw it up. You know what I mean? Like, we say, oh, he's going to go, Chorostukado, you know, or something. He's going to completely screw it up. So we're watching the game, and we get to it, and Harry goes, hey, Steve, we have people here in the right field, and it's John Korostecki, and he nailed it. He nailed it. And we were like, what the hell? But then he says, they're having a bachelor party. So we got Korostecki, but he screwed up bachelor. And so when I read that story of the family in Omaha, I was like, man, that's fantastic. I mean, that's just great. That's one of my favorite memories, too. All right, Dan, Rob, you guys can hang on.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, sure. Cool. Hang on a second. I want to get more stories from these guys. It's a terrific book. And again, one of the other things that's great about this book is that it will make you remember great stories and great memories that you've associated with. So check it out. Follow these guys at Cubs Century on Twitter and check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/NickDShow. We'll talk more about Cubs 100 Century at Wrigley right after this on GN. Good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. And, home season at Wrigley began yesterday. Baseball season has started. It's in full swing, and we're having a great time. And you always have a great time at Wrigley, always. And it's one of the most magical places on earth. And there is a book by Dan Campana and Rob Carroll that's available now that you should definitely get. It's called Cubs 100, A Century at Wrigley. And it is 100 great stories about the team, about Wrigley, and about personal experience of going to Wrigley. It's a great, great book. And you can check out the Facebook page at facebook.com/100WrigleyStories. And I want to welcome Dan and Rob back to the show. Welcome back, guys.
Hey, thank you.
Is there do you guys have some signings or a signing coming up that you'd like to plug?
So we've got a few events coming up. We just went through a pretty big burst of them in the last couple of weeks since the book came out. Mm-hmm. We've got one actually down by the ballpark in Wrigleyville. Wilder Cubs are out of town, so it's a little bit lighter traffic down there. But we'll be at Wrigleyville Sports on April 24th. I think 12 till about 2, I think, is the time frame. So that's I think that's a good one because, you know, it's in the ballpark, you know, the buzz of the neighborhood is starting to pick up with the season getting underway, especially the home season. But Sunday afternoon when they're out of town, it's probably not a bad time to come down there because you can kind of get down there a little easier than you would on a game day, especially with all the construction and everything going on around there. So, we've got that one. And like you said, on our Facebook page, you can check out the events. We've got some others coming up. You know, as we drift into the summer a little bit, and the nice thing is that with the Cubs being, you know, exciting and popular again, people are interested in coming out and talking Cubs. And that was a great, you know, bump for us last year because the Cubs were good. People wanted to talk about them, which
right.
helped us, you know, in the process.
Yeah. Well, no, I think the timing of these two books is real good, guys. I think, you know, that last season and this season, man, I'm telling you, the Cubs look damn good. It's just... It's scary. So a couple of other stories that I wanted to get to. Brant Brown tells a story here in the book, and it has nothing to do with dropping the ball in Milwaukee, which, by the way, a game I was at. So
I'm noticing a trend here that some of these moments that maybe but you know what? I think every Cub fan can kind of identify with that. You know, you think you're the blame when they lose 5 in a row when you're there.
Oh, yeah.
Like that.
Oh, so. No. No, just listen, this is another true story. Luckily, because I've, you know, my association here at WGN, I got to meet Ron Santo many times and become a friend. And I went up to the booth many times to see him. And I went up at Miller Park one time to see Ron and Pat. And I get up to the booth, and the Cubs are losing. It's like the seventh inning. The Cubs are down, and I'm 0-for-9 in Milwaukee. Okay, every time I go, and I was at the damn Brant Brown game, so I'm 0-for-9, including that game. So I go up to the booth, and they're down like 5 runs, and I'm talking to Ron, and I tell him I'm 0-for-8. And Ron, and I'm not kidding you. Ron goes, "You have to leave now." And you can't come back. You can't come back to Milwaukee. And I told him I was at the Brant Brown game. I'm 0-for-8. He's like, no, you can't ever come back to Milwaukee. And you know what? When Ron Santo tells you that you can't go back to Milwaukee to see the Cubs play, you don't go. And I've not been back since. I've not been back since. And I had an opportunity to go see Zambrano pitch the no-hitter. And I was too scared. I mean, even though they weren't playing the Brewers, I was like, I'm not going. So anyway, the Brant Brown story is kind of an interesting one. The Interleague Play story. Talk about that one.
Yeah, it was sort of in the vein of the quick callback. I had found out that he was somehow a traveling instructor or something with the Mariners organization. So I just reached out to them and said, "Hey, you know, could you put a word into Brant Brown? We'd be interested in talking to him." And I got an email back about 15 minutes later from somebody in the Mariners organization that said, "Hey, we let Brant know that you're interested in talking." Sure enough, within like an hour, I had a phone, voicemail from him, and I called him right back. I don't know what he was doing. That I kind of envisioned a David Putty scene where he was just kind of sitting waiting for somebody to contact him. He picks up the phone and calls me right away. But I was at that game for the first 3 or 4 years that interleague was a big deal when the Cubs and Sox played 3-3 on each side of town.
Right.
I was at all the games at Wrigley. And so, I had been there the week before when he had a walk-off against John Rocker. So I was in the stands for that one. Then I was in the stands the following Friday when he hits it off off of Karchner from the Sox.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He was a guy that was, again, kind of almost in that DeRosa category where people were kind of respecting him, that he played hard. He wasn't going to get cracked the lineup very often. But he came through and he made the plays when he needed to defensively, and his bat got hot at the right time. And, just to get his perspective, because as a fan, it was a big deal to finally have the Sox there and to finally be able to settle these squabbles we have with our friends and colleagues and people that we know who are fans of the other team. So to be in the stands and go, "This is a game that means something, between these two teams, and it's in my ballpark."
It's
at Wrigley for me. And what we talked about, and didn't make it into the story necessarily, but, it came up in some other conversations we had. There are a lot of weird things that happened in that game, including the ball that get hung up in the ivy that, ended up being a ground rule double, cut off a run that would have given the Sox the lead. If, that doesn't happen and Brown doesn't hit a walk-off, Cubs don't win that game. They don't go to the playoffs that year because it was that thin of margin for them. So it was a meaningful game in a bunch of different ways, and it was fun to hear from somebody who you maybe didn't expect to hear from. There are a lot of guys, that the bigger names that you could have turned to and said, "Hey, what was that like?" And it was just another game for them, but he remembered it, in a unique way. So that was fun to hear from him about that.
Absolutely. I just want to mention quickly here some of the other people that you have. Lynn Bramer from XRT tells a great story in here. Bert Hooten, you got Bert Hooten to tell a story. And Dennis Eckersley, which actually is one of my favorite stories in the book, about how it was different for Eckersley when he came back for the All-Star game.
Yeah,
that's a fun one. Wayne Mesmer tells a story in here. You got cameramen, you got ushers, you got people who had weddings at Wrigley. I mean, you guys covered the whole thing, man. And it is a really, really special book. I'm a lifelong Cub fan. And like I said, grew up across, like just down the street from Wrigley. And these two books that you guys put together are on my bookshelf, and they're favorites of mine that I go back to. And I'm not just blowing smoke. You guys did a great job.
So, well, thank you very much, Nick. We appreciate it, and we're proud of both of them. I mean, they're both fantastic, and I think they both kind of have their own lives. With the first book really focusing on Wrigley, and the second one focusing on the team.
Yeah, yeah. You guys did a great job, really, and much success to you, Dan Campana, Rob Carroll. The book is called Cubs 100: A Century at Wrigley. And by the way, we didn't mention Len Casper did your introduction, and Len, what a great guy, man! What a pro, and what a great guy.
Yeah, it was hard to hang up the phone from talking to him. We could have talked to him all day.
Yeah, he's great. Not only that, that guy knows his music too, man. I'm serious. And he's one of my favorite bands of all time is Buffalo Tom out of Boston. And I every time I see Buffalo Tom live, Len is there. he's there all the time. We hang out at those shows. But anyway, it's a great book. You can check out facebook.com/100WrigleyStories for all the events and signings. And you can follow these guys on Twitter at Cubs Century. Terrific having you guys on. It was a lot of fun. Thanks so much. Okay.
Thanks, Nick.
All right. Take care. Go Cubs is right. All right. There's Dan and Rob. A terrific book. Cubs 100, A Century at Wrigley. All of the information is on our Facebook page, and you can get the book there as well. Facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right. Go Cubs. Go. The home season has begun at Wrigley, and there's nothing like going to a baseball game at Wrigley Field. And this book really captures some of that magic. All right. We'll take a break here. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN.